come on in.
And now, back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
The kids love him.
And your host.
Welcome to paradise.
Bill Frank.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to The Bill Frank Show on KVTA News Talk 1520, bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. Each of my guests will share his perspectives on one or the other of these topics. My next guest describes himself as a patriot, a soldier, a spy, and an assassin. The description does not do him full justice. He's an amalgam of James Bond, Jason Bourne, and Jack Ryan. We'll discuss his years of service as a presidential assistant during the John F. Kennedy administration. William Bertram McFarland, known as Bertie Mac, never sought out or even imagined a role as a special assistant to President John F. Kennedy. He holds a degree from Duke University in mathematics and in physics, specifically quantum mechanics. But fate and the U.S. government extinguished any hope of a career in either of those fields. He slowly became a friend and a confidant to President Kennedy in his unsought role as special assistant to the president, and he tried in vain to resign that position when President Kennedy was assassinated. His knowledge and his back-channel contacts and he had accumulated continued to accumulate as his career progressed, and it made him uniquely valuable to a long succession of U.S. presidents, 9 in total. Bertie Mac has 15 years of access at the highest levels of 9 administrations and a lot of highly classified information. Joining us truly from a secret location somewhere in the United States. Hi, Bertie. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks, Bill. Hope you are.
Well, we are, and thank you for joining me on the show today. I read your memoir, and your memoir is titled Back Channel, The Kennedy Years. It reads like fiction. It reads like a Robert Ludlum novel. So give us the story, if you will, the Reader's Digest version, of how you went from Duke University to becoming a special assistant to 9 different presidents.
Well, actually, I had decided to pursue a career in intelligence, and towards that end, I went through intelligence training, then went to Ranger School, I went to Jump School, I did special ops, I spent a year in Monterey, California at the language school studying Russian, and then was assigned as an interim assignment as a courier between our embassy in Moscow and the State Department in Washington. It was in December 1961 when I was making just one of my regular runs. I was coming back to Moscow. And generally, I breezed right through the customs because I had a diplomatic passport. I had the diplomatic pouch with me and all the rest of it. But this time, to my very great astonishment, they stopped me, and I swore at them fluently in Russian and said, "You know, what are you doing?" I said, "Call the embassy." And then I was relieved to see past the customs gate another embassy employee striding towards me, and he came through, and without a word, he unlocked the handcuff that I was handcuffed to the diplomatic pouch, took the pouch, turned on his heel, and walked away. Never said a word. Mm. And I thought, this is not good. This is definitely not good. And indeed it wasn't. I got literally lifted off my feet by 2 Russian KGB agents that looked like they played professional football. And was taken to Lubyanka. Lubyanka is the headquarters, or was the headquarters of the KGB. And in the basement, that's where they did the torture. Mm. And Lubyanka, I mean, once you got into Lubyanka, the only way you were coming out was feet first, and that was that was well known. So I was quite sure that that was it for me. And indeed, I was tortured. I just hoped that they'd go a little bit too far and that finally it would be over. And no one was more surprised than I was when late Well, I found out later. It was late at night because down there, there's no windows. There's nothing. You can't tell if it's whether it's morning or night in the real world. But I was dragged out of my cell, taken again by two very burly people. I tried to bite and scratch, and then I felt the old jab of the needle, and the next thing I knew, I had waked up. Somebody had washed me. I had clean clothes on. I was still bleeding, and there was something wrong internally. I couldn't do much. And they put me back to sleep again. The next thing I know, I woke up in a Ville limousine with two Russian, very high-ranking generals who told me that they had taken me out simply because Chairman Khrushchev was planning to install nuclear-tipped missiles in Cuba. And this, of course, was probably the most highly guarded secret in the Soviet Union. And what he wanted to do was to just blindside Kennedy. He felt that Kennedy was too young, too weak, too immature, and too intellectual to really respond. And his circle of military advisors, he had a bunch of hardliners, and they were willing to risk a nuclear war. They figured the Soviet Union had been through wars before. Their citizens knew how to survive the rigors of war. And the United States, with the exception of the Civil War and the Revolutionary War, had really never been to war. And they thought that they would prevail.
My guest is Bertie Mac McFarland. We're talking about his memoir, Back Channel, and specifically talking about the Kennedy years. Before we go on with the story, which is fascinating, I want to stop and talk about how you actually got turned over to the Soviet Union. Why do you think, or why do you now believe, that your own country sold you out?
One of the higher-ranking embassy employees, I believe it was the cultural attaché, I got caught spying red-handed, and I think the decision was made probably by Alan Dulles, who was then head of the CIA, that the cultural attaché, if that's indeed who it was, I think it was a lot more valuable than I was, so they swapped me.
I see. All right. Well, going on with your story, so now you now know the secret of the century, or at least the secret of that time, that the Soviets were planning to put nuclear missiles in Cuba, just 90 miles off of our shores. And these two generals told you this. Why?
Because they wanted to get a message to Kennedy, and they had no possible way of doing it. They knew that I had been attached to the embassy, and that when any American embassy saw me, there was going to be a diplomatic uproar and total outrage because, I was really, really beaten up.
Hmm.
And they dumped me on the Finnish embassy, on the steps of the Finnish embassy. Fortunately, they had retrieved my passport and papers and stuff because I was unrecognizable.
Mm.
And finally, made it back to the States. It took Walter Reed Hospital surgeons almost 4 months to really get me back into some kind of reasonable shape. And the first time I met President Kennedy, I was in a wheelchair.
Wow. My guest is William Bertram McFarland, also known as Bertie. So, Bertie, when you were rescued, you returned back to the United States. Clearly, you'd been beaten up, you'd been tortured, and that would have given you some credibility, but anybody that might have been trying to turn you as a double agent would have done something similar to make it more credible. When you were returned to the United States, what made U.S. officials believe that you were legitimate and not a double agent for the Soviets?
The shape that I was in was so dramatic that nobody's going to do that. I mean, just nobody's going to do that. And besides that, it was verifiable. Because of what I said, they started doing U-2 flights over over Cuba, and sure enough, they found the installation. So there was no question.
Wow. All right. Well, talk to us or connect the dots, if you will, then, between how you were released from Walter Reed, you went to meet President Kennedy for the very first time, you've got this unbelievable information to deliver to President Kennedy. Talk to us about that whole process.
Well, actually, my first meeting with President Kennedy was extremely embarrassing because, as I say, I was in a wheelchair, and when I was wheeled in, and I thought, my God, I'm in the Oval Office. And here's this tanned, fit-looking guy smiling down at me. And I looked around, and there's the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, and another guy I didn't recognize, but who turned out to be the National Security Advisor. And I just thought, I just hoped the world would somehow or another open up and swallow me, because I had given my word that this message would be delivered to the president and the president only. And I felt like, you know, these guys had risked their lives to save mine. I owed them the honesty of keeping my word. Mm-hmm. And I told the president that. And I said, look, you can obviously require me to do it in front of these gentlemen. And if you do, I will. But I did give my word. And he was very nice about it. He said, I think that would be an inexcusable abuse of power. And he sent them away. And we wound up chatting. As a matter of fact, we wound up having lunch together in his private dining room.
Wow, what a story. So, Bertie, you and President Kennedy became good friends after that. I mean, it went beyond this initial meeting and so forth. You became special assistant to the president. How did that all take place?
I was the link. I was the communication link between the generals who had direct access to Chairman Khrushchev and the White House.
That makes sense. My guest is Bertie McFarland, author of the book Back Channel, The Kennedy Years, the first in a series of books that he's writing. Now, President Kennedy, shortly after the Cuban Missile Crisis was defused, was assassinated. And you wanted to leave public service then, but you were unable to. So tell us why you went on to serve underneath several other presidents after Kennedy.
Well, I submitted my resignation to President Johnson, and he looked at it and read it and folded it up and put it in his inside jacket pocket and said, Bertie, I can't accept this. He says, I need you. He said, I'm not going to accept your resignation. I need you. You got to stay on with me. You got to help me out here. Well, I mean, I was in the military. he is the commander-in-chief. you know, there's what are you going to do?
That's a proverbial offer you can't refuse, I see.
That's right.
All right. So that makes sense. Then you went on to serve underneath not only Johnson, but Nixon and so forth. When did your service finally end to the United States?
Under the regime of George W. Bush.
George W. Bush. So it went through the Clinton years all the way through to George W. Bush. Wow. Incredible. Now, of all of the presidents that you served under as a special assistant to the president, I've got to ask you, who stands out in your mind and why does that president stand out?
Well, it's a great question, but it's way too complex for me to try to answer. I mean, obviously the one that I liked, loved really the most was John F. Kennedy, but I mean, there were others that I liked. And let me just say that worked for is one way of describing it, but really I was kind of used. I was a heck of a valuable tool, and even though my office was in the White House in the West Wing when I served under Kennedy, after that I never lived in the United States until I came back during the Reagan years. And then I came back not to live in Washington, but to live elsewhere in the United States briefly.
And, Bertie, I don't want to give away all of the book and all of the intrigue and the political assassinations, your trips to Vietnam and all of that. I will leave that for readers to read in your memoir, Back Channeled, the Kennedy Years. But you yourself are credited with developing the term back channel because of this particular incident. So I want to ask you, what do you want readers to take away from reading your memoir, Back Channel?
Well, first of all, I think it's a... a rather fascinating look at what happens behind closed doors in the White House, and how, you know, and a look at how power really operates. I don't think that the majority of American citizens are going to appreciate a couple of facts that will become glaringly evident. I mean, all governments lie to their citizens at some point. Unfortunately, ours does it quite a lot, and has been doing so at least since FDR. And I think that people need to take a closer look and get more involved in the running of our government. That, you know, we've become apathetic. Patriotism is not a word that's heard on the street very often. Certainly, if you look at what's happening in Washington today with the two parties just at each other's throats over anything and everything, something's got to give. And the only people, the only mechanism to make that something give is for the citizenry to become more involved and say, hey, look, we don't like this. You guys get to work and make these things happen.
And it's an election year. No better time to do that. My guest has been Bertie McFarland, author of the memoir Back Channel, The Kennedy Years. Bertie, it's a fascinating story. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I would ask them to go to my website, which is www.bertiemac.com.
Oh, that is great. Bertie, thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Well, thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And I'll be back with my next guest after these words from my sponsors.